The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and/or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all. Good evening. You are listening to a Rattledge Broadcasting premiere podcast, Long Road to Ruin. And I am your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And ladies and gentlemen, it's Tuesday. He ain't got no job, and he ain't got shit to do. The protocol son, my brother from another mother, when it comes to black shit, he's my favorite host. Ladies and gentlemen. From the three-point line, Jason Teasley, how do you do, sir?
Doing good. Much better than I was yesterday.
That's good. Yeah, you didn't miss much with the Godzilla versus Kong review. It's, you know, same old thing whenever Alexis, Robert, and I get together. So, you know how that go. You know how that is, Jason.
Yes, I do. And that's my little PSA. Just, I want to offer a public apology. Because yesterday I mixed up my medication and took my sleeping pills instead of my migraine medicine. And as soon as I sent you the message, I went to sleep and I woke up at 6 a.m. the day for work. So I slept approximately 10 and a half hours. So word of advice, kids out there, do not mix up your sleeping medication with your migraine medication because you will miss a show that you really want to be a part of. And I apologize to you and Robert.
Thank you for the apology. It's fine. Second time today, Dorian had to also call me and apologize for missing shows. And it's like, it's fine, guys. It's like, I don't mind it when people miss shows. I mind it when I have to cancel shows outright or reschedule them for like months on end. Chris Bailey. I still have the artwork for the Flintstones because I don't know when we're ever going to do that show.
Okay. So that was my little... That's not my little PSA.
Well, we appreciate you, Jason, and I'm glad that you're okay now. So tonight, this one was originally slated for our run of Black History Month shows, and we just plumb ran out of room in the 4 weeks of February. So we kicked it here into April, but it's the one that Jason and I have been wanting to do for a while. It definitely fits into our milieu of Afrocentric comedies. This is the Friday trilogy, which originally started out as just Friday, written by Ice Cube and DJ Pooh, directed by F. Gary Gary, who's currently got a movie on Netflix starring, what's his face? The short comedian. Fatherhood, help me. Yeah, that guy. well, it was successful enough that it's
won. Too quick.
Yeah, I know. Kevin Hart. So yeah. Friday was successful enough, and it became kind of a cult classic that it spawned two sequels. Next Friday and Friday After Next.
Actually, three. One is in...
Yeah, one is allegedly in production. Yeah. We'll see if purgatory. It actually makes air. But
purgatory.
Then there was also like a brief animated series. But I'll tell you what's fun about Friday. I watched it with my kids on Saturday, Sunday rather. I watched it on Easter. And the whole time they're watching the movie, again, they are 13 and almost 10. And the whole time they're watching the movie, they're like, oh, that's where that meme came from. Oh, that's where that's from. Oh, by Felicia's from Friday? Like, oh my God. To say that Friday has woven its way.
Oh, you mean we're not talking about the Rebecca Black song? Shit. I did not do my research.
Fucking Zachary Strobel made that same joke. But yeah, it is funny to see how Friday has woven its way into the lexicon and the fabric of American culture. It didn't quite get, it hasn't quite made the National Registry of Film, like most of what we talk about, but it is definitely, I think, an important film in cinema history. It came out in 1995, and I don't think I saw this in the theater. I think this was one of those where it had its run in the theater for however long that was, and then it became like a big hit on video, DVD, what have you. And I'm 99.9% certain that's how I saw it, was somebody had it on one of our movie nights, and we watched it. And Friday is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. Like, it's hard to believe that DJ Pooh and one of the guys from NWA, specifically the one that wrote Fuck the Police, wrote such a funny comedy. When was the first time that you saw Friday?
Yeah, I didn't see it in theaters. I also seen it on video. And it was one of those things that I think we was at, I think I actually seen it during my senior year of high school. It was probably at a house party or something. I was at my senior year of high school. Or some kind of get together, and somebody had it, and we ended up watching it. We rented or got pizzas or something, and we ended up watching it. And it's hilarious. And it has like ingrained itself in definitely modern culture and, you know, memes, you know, in the vernacular of today. And, you know, you saying that, your kid's done it. My wife actually did not remember Friday, and like I watched it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I watched one movie a day, and like I was just bringing up little tidbits and stuff, and she's like, I don't remember that. Is that where that came from? I was like, the original Friday is ingrained in pop culture. For especially Debo, you got knocked the fuck out by Felicia. Oh, yeah.
Dude, one of my, I still to this day, and it's hard to work it into a conversation, but one of the funniest lines of this movie, and I was thinking this as you were talking, you know, with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire out, there's been a lot of discussions on this network about the Ghostbusters franchise. And one of the things said of the original and the sequel is how quotable they are. You know, why is my drippings with goo? He's slimy, et cetera, et cetera. Friday is also one of the most eminently quotable movies I've ever seen. And like one of the, and it's stuff that, again, because it's so out of left field, it's why it's so funny. And we'll talk about this when we get into the craft review, but you know, Ice Cube had said of another series of movies that we reviewed, you know, Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, and Juice, that he was tired of seeing portrayals of South Central Los Angeles as like this violent hell on earth. He was like, yeah, we understand that there, you know, that there's a violent, you know, gang culture here, but people live here. Real people live here every day, and they have stories too. And it's not as violent as you're making it out to be. And so that's what the idea behind Friday was. So when certain characters say things, they're coming from a place of truth. And that's what makes them even funnier, that somebody would say something as weird as what Felicia says when she's like, yo, I need to borrow your VCR so I can dub a tape. Like, yeah. I still laugh at that, because like the idea of somebody could coming over to borrow a VCR.
Yeah. And, you know, I still quote, you know, you say you quote a lot of movies. Friday is ranks up there with Van Wilder as one of my quotable movies, because every time I come out of the bathroom, I always go in there and go, You need to wait about 35, 45 minutes before you go in there.
If any man over the age of 21 hasn't said you need to wait 35, 45 minutes before you go into the bathroom, then you're not a real man.
Yeah, I quote that. Like, you got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah, you got knocked the fuck out's a big one.
How Chris you get Tucker's fired on your day off.
Chris Tucker's rant about how there's nothing in the fridge that matches. He's like, y'all ain't got nothing that matches. And then he, it's just like peanut butter, no jelly, Kool-Aid, no sugar, ham, no burger.
Yeah. And it's funny because you like to think that, you know, all these characters from the original Friday, you know, you have Big Worm, you have Debo, you have Smokey, you have Craig.
What up, Big Perm? I'm in Big Worm.
Yeah, and you know, you have all these characters that you know you would actually see in the hood,
right?
You know, and Miss Johnson, the Reverend that comes by.
Oh yeah,
you know, the uptight neighbor. You know, you have like these real people. You know, Miss Johnson knowing what she's doing out there watering her lawn, giving all the guys a show. You know,
I was thinking of an even like funnier, subtle one. Like, so I grew up in an all black neighborhood. I've seen one or two nerdy black kids run before. And so when the one guy, he like gets his chain taken by Debo and he starts running towards his car and he's doing like one of these.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen that run. All right, we're gonna end up talking about the whole movie before we talk about the movie. So, right quick, Friday's a 1995 American buddy comedy directed by F. Gary Gary and written by Ice Cube and DJ Pooh. It is the first installment of the Friday trilogy. It stars Ice Cube, Chris Tucker, Nia Long, Tiny Zeus, Lister, Regina King, Anna Maria Horsford, Bernie Mac, and John Witherspoon. Set in South Central Los Angeles, it follows unemployed friends Craig Jones and Smokey, who face troubles after becoming indebted to the local drug dealer while also contending with a neighborhood bully. It received positive reviews from critics, many of whom praised the comedic sequences, writing, and acting. It was also a commercial success, grossing $27 million worldwide off, like, I think, a $6 million budget. No, sorry, even better. A $3.5 million budget. This thing almost made $30 million. It's obtained a large cult following and inspiring internet memes and pop culture references, and a media franchise, sequels, et cetera, et cetera. And I did, before we get into this, I did want to read this to you to sort of back up what I was saying before. Before Friday's release, movies such as Boys in the Hood and Colors, it's another one we have to talk about at some point, portrayed life in the hood as violent and menacing. Ice Cube and DJ Pooh felt that these films did not portray the full picture of living in the hood, missing a more lighthearted element, with Ice Cube later saying, "We had fun in the hood. We used to trip off the neighborhood." Therefore, Cube and DJ Pooh decided to create a film that would portray the environment. And it's not quite Waiting for Godot, but it has that kind of structure to it, you know, where Cube and Tucker are basically just sitting and watching the neighborhood. Like, so much of that movie was shot basically on a still camera and a tripod in a framing of the house, like the porch. Just this Ice Cube and Chris Tucker sitting there, and a car drives in. There's an interaction. The car drives away. And then there's some more dialogue. Someone comes home and goes in the house. Someone leaves the house, you know, and then another car pulls up. They rarely, it's kind of like Clerks in its structure.
Very similar.
It's very much centered on this front porch. And occasionally they might go to a neighbor's house or, you know, here or there. But for the most part, you are centered on this one area and the world kind of comes in and out. So I think in terms of Ice Cube sort of making a commentary on the lightheartedness of the hood, the way the movie is structured gives you a great window into the world that he saw and that he was commenting on with Friday. And you wouldn't think that as silly a movie as Friday is commenting on the neighborhood, but it absolutely was. Like, this is everything that, in terms of satire, social satire, that Don't Be a Menace isn't. Like, Don't Be a Menace is obviously a very over-the-top broad parody that, you know, is dealing with it's dealing with some of the stupidity of hood culture. This is the same kind of satire, but it is much more subtle, and I think in many ways much more effective.
And, you know, like you said, it was, I mean, the budget for this couldn't have been very much.
No, it was $3.5 million. They shot this thing for $1.50.
Yeah, so because of the, you know, pretty much the framing of it was strictly two guys hanging out, just and shooting the shit. The funniest thing that I found in this movie, and, you know, the you may disagree, is the montage of Smokey getting high. When he's dancing around, just smoking up when they're outside, and he's just getting high. Craig's just looking at him. He's looking over at him, and he's dancing around. He's just, and you're like, Chris Tucker is just so good in this role, and it sucks that he never reprised the role. But yeah, this movie is a look at the, I won't say the lighter side, but the more human side of the hood. Absolutely. Because who doesn't set out, you know, people watch.
Yeah.
And that's something, I mean, hell, I do it here at my house now.
I was going to say, that's actually a really good point, because I talked to a lot of people, talked to a lot of women who have said, I like to people watch. I kind of just like to sit on the bench and watch people, or I kind of like to kind of take a step back. You know, if you're at a party or something and they kind of want to like sit back and kind of watch in the world in front of them and not necessarily engage. And that's exactly what Cube and Tucker are doing through the course of this movie. Really quick, just so we can, so people understand if you've never seen the movie. So Ice Cube worked for UPS and was allegedly stealing boxes and got fired on his day off. Okay. Cause that becomes a running gag throughout this movie. So because he's home today, his dad's a dog catcher, his mom works somewhere, his sister's in school. So everyone has left the house, and he's just home by himself, and his pothead, pot-dealing friend, Smokey, it's a little on the nose, comes by, and they just chill out in front of the house. We have two concurrent plots going on. You have a neighborhood bully played by Tawny Lister Jr., who just kind of roams around stealing shit from people. He's stolen a beach cruiser from somebody. Same guy, he stole his chain. Anytime he comes by Craig and Smokey, they all have to like hide their stuff from him so he doesn't steal it. At one point, Tawny Lister, Debo, gets Chris Tucker to break into the neighboring house to see what they can steal, et cetera, et cetera. And this all, you find out that Debo is actually like sleeping with the neighbor girl, Felicia, and he beats the shit out of her, which then raises the ire of the sister, who is the love interest in the movie. And when Debo knocks her on her ass, there's a Chekhov's gun that's set up at the, a literal Chekhov's gun that's set up at the beginning of the movie where Cube has a gun in his drawer. And it's like, it's for protection because the hood is dangerous. And after the thing with Debo, and also, which is the second part of the plot, which is essentially Smokey done smoked up all the pot he was supposed to deal, and now he owes Big Worm money, as you do. Don't get high off your own supply. That's what they say, right, Jason?
Right.
So, yeah, so Big Worm's going to kill them if they don't get him his money for the pot, for the mortgage on the farm, and they have to deal with Debo. So Ice Cube's got a gun, and between Big Perm and Debo, Cube goes to get that gun because what the fuck? And he runs into his dad, and his dad, and the best part of this movie, the most poignant part and really the heart of this thing, and one of the reasons why I love this movie as much as I do, because it's a man's movie, where John Witherspoon, who plays Ice Cube's dad, tells him, you know, a gun's a pretty permanent solution to a temporary problem. And back in my day, we used to just solve all problems with our fists. And you're so afraid to take an ass whooping that you're going to go kill a guy and ruin the rest of your life and his life for that matter. Maybe put the gun down, go be a man. Maybe you win the fight, maybe you don't. But that's what being a man's all about. Few people really make that connection to Friday, but it's there. Like, this is very much a coming of age, be a man story. Seeing as you have Craig, who's sort of, you know, in this arrested development stage of his life. Slacker is the word they use. Inevitably, he does put down the gun. And again, Debo knocks the girl on her ass. and him and Cube have a fight. And in what can only be described as an ECW-esque parking lot brawl, Cube brains him with a fucking brick and wins the fight. And he wins the love of, you know, he wins his love. And they are able to steal, get all the stuff back from Debo, pay off Big Worm. Big Worm. And thus all of the strains of the threads of the plot are resolved. And Smokey, one of the funnier lines at the end of the movie, he's like, I'm done with all this shit. I'm going to rehab. And he looks dead right at the camera and goes, you know, I was playing and you know this, Jason Teasley.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's really good about this, because, you know, Craig actually does pull the gun on Debo, and, you know, and it just, and then you have like the little flashback at the top with his dad. And it says, you know, and he kind of puts the gun away and he takes an ass whooping. But then like he gets loose. He's getting choked out choked out on the hood of a car, and Debo lets go and walks, turns his back, which you never do in a street fight. Mark, you never turn your back on somebody in the street fight, because, you know, your ass is going to get handed to you. Mm-hmm. And here comes Craig and hits him with a brick and then beats his ass, leaves him laying. And of course, you know, you've heard the line a few times. And it's funny because the guy that got his beachcomber bike stolen, he's chased, runs over, and just, Debo's getting ready to get up, and he runs over, just punches Debo and takes his shit back. And, you know, of course, you got Smokey saying you got knocked the fuck out.
Which was said earlier when Debo, it was Debo punched the kid with the beachcomber and Smokey runs.
Yeah, when he comes to get it back. What's funny is...
Hang on, could we talk about how there's just some of the gayest running in this movie? Smokey, the kid with the beachcomber, and a couple of situations. Everyone just sort of... We have, like... Fucking Lamar from Revenge of the Nerds. It was like half the black men in the black community run like athletes. The other ones run like Lamar. You know? It's great.
And earlier scene, what's funny is after Debo knocks him out, he's like, I don't know what the fuck he was talking about. I told him not to come over here. I told him, you know, just let you have the bike, you know, because he brought his dad with him or something. And Debo is just like, you want some? No, I told you not to come over here. I told you to let you have the bike. Don't even ask for it back. But yeah, Friday is culturally ingrained in, you know, especially our generation, and it resonates through memes and stuff now, and vernacular like the Bad Felicia stuff.
I think if you didn't necessarily grow up in South Central Los Angeles, these are all relatable characters. I think to one degree or another, we have a moochie neighbor who violates boundaries on an ongoing basis. We have slacker friends. We have, you know, hot women jogging around the neighborhood. We have a dad who blows up the bathroom on an ongoing basis and has no patience for his son. We have a mom who cooks breakfast for just herself. That is one of the funnier jokes of this movie. Is he goes to get the he goes to make a bowl of cereal, and there's no milk, and everyone's just like, put some water on that, it'll be fine. And then she's like cooking breakfast, like in a few minutes later they cut back to the kitchen and his mom's just cooking up an entire like table full of breakfast, and he's all happy about it, Ice Cube is, and she's like, no, this is all for me.
Like, yes,
to one degree or another, yeah. There's a lot of relatable characters and situations in this movie that seems otherworldly, but again, every town's got a bully, you know, every town has these like little funny antagonisms and interactions. And, you know, and then on top of that, again, the movie is so goddamn sharp and so funny.
It's witty. It's witty, yeah. Funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the one-liners are just, there's a lot of banter. Mac in it.
There's a lot of banter in the movie that's very sing-songy. You know, they say of Shakespearean writing, Shakespeare wrote with a musical banter. And that's kind of how Friday comes across.
Down here at the corner, what is the corner, whatever. He said, we call that a little twin.
Another really funny interaction is the whole bit with where the girl sets up Smokey with a date later on, and she comes by the house, and he's like, "You told me she looks like Janet Jackson. She over here looking like Freddie Jackson."
That is so funny. Chris Tucker. Chris Tucker is hilarious.
Dude, go down the street and get you some food. I know you hungry. I fucking cried. Every time I hear that line, I lose it. I know you hungry. Because God knows my friends and I have said that to each other.
And you got old girl in there trying not to fall asleep, get her hair messed up.
Anything else about... We've been at this for almost a half an hour now. Anything else about Friday that's worth talking about?
The original Friday, if you're listening to this, which I don't know if anybody's tuning in tonight, if you are listening,
we have an audience. We are mad popular on Twitter these days.
If you have not seen the original Friday, definitely put it in your queue. Watch it this weekend. It's free on Tubi. I watched all three of them on Tubi for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely check it out. It's the original Friday. Definitely, if you're from, mine and Mark's age range, sit back, get you a big, nice thing of popcorn, maybe have you a beer or two, nice cold Corona, or a nice cold 40, poured out for the homies, and just enjoy a nice cinema from the 90s that will make you laugh your ass off.
The last thing I'm going to say on this, other than I agree with you, is, Q plays Doughboy in Boys in the Hood, and he plays kind of an angry toughy in Anaconda, and like it's like everyone just sees Fuck the Police and looks at Cube and go, that we just want the angry black guy and everything. And here he's so goddamn charming. Like, Ice Cube has kind of an affable effectiveness to him in Friday that you don't see in the other roles that he's in. Like the fact that he would go on to do other comedies is because
and family movies
is because he did Friday, because you could finally his portrayal of Craig as a sort of this affable slacker who can kind of muster up some toughness if he needs to. He's no punk, but he's also got kind of like a lightheartedness to him. Like, Chris Tucker plays a clown. Smokey's a clown. He's a coward. He's Shaggy, from the Scooby-Doo. He's that kind of guy. But Craig, it's so funny. Everyone kind of reminds, it's the last thing I'll say on this. When Vince McMahon talked about, or when Chris Benoit talked about, like, how Vince McMahon gave him personality, all he said was smile. And he, would show the gap in his teeth. But it was one of those where it's just like, Chris Benoit was always just tougher than nails. Deadly serious. He was just a wrestler. And, people go to the WWF and Vince McMahon takes a look at you and he sees a little something and he draws that out of you, and that becomes your whole character for the rest of your career. It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's a shame Vince McMahon's a scumbag and a rapist. But
yeah,
before we knew that,
he was shitting on people's heads.
So. Yeah, but before we knew Vince McMahon was the devil, his talent was seeing that little light in you and bringing the light out. And that's kind of what happens with Ice Cube and Friday, is that he has this little light of warmness in him that this movie brought out, and people saw an entirely different side of Ice Cube, which is going to work fairly decently in the next two movies.
It definitely brought out and showed that he had range in his acting abilities.
More range than he was being given credit for. All right. For time's sake, we're going to move on to next Friday, which is a 2000 American stoner comedy film and the sequel to 1995's Friday. It is the first film to be produced by Ice Cube's film production company, Cube Vision, and it was written by Cube himself. This time, DJ Pooh was not a part of this. Neither was F. Gary. This one was directed by Steve Carr. and they replaced Chris Tucker with Mike Epps. And this introduces Justin Pierce, John Witherspoon is back, Tamala Jones, Jaime Lister Jr. reprises his role. It tells the story of Craig Jones as he goes to live with his uncle, who had just won the lottery in Rancho Cucamonga. After Debo escapes from prison, Craig contends with three criminal brothers known as the Joker Brothers. It was released January 12, 2000. It grossed $59 million worldwide off a budget of $11 million. So this one was also wildly, you know, it's another example of make your movies for a song and it only has to be a little bit of a hit and you'll make money. You'll make profitability as opposed to, you know, $200 million budgets. So I'm going to beat that horse to fucking death. So Debo breaks out of prison. That this one picks up where the last one left off. Or rather jail. He hasn't gone to prison just yet. And there is a difference. So Debo's in jail. He gets out and he wants revenge on Craig. When word of this gets back to Ice Cube's dad, he says, okay, well, we need to hide you. We're going to take you to Rancho Cucamonga and you go live with your uncle. And that's pretty much
it. And this is only a week later.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it for what happens in that part of the movie. So we have kind of like a soft reboot of this entire franchise that takes place in Rancho Cucamonga. We meet the uncle. We have to now do some more world building. We have to, instead of doing it in South Central, they do it in the really hoity, rich area, this cul-de-sac. And there's a old Korean lady. And then there's this Mexican family that's next door where the Joker brothers are. And then there's the uncle and the other comic sidekick, Mike Epps, who is Ice Cube's cousin. And, you know, you and I have talked about this. You know, I always refer to it as like the TNA backstage segment where everyone's talking all at once and it never stops. You can't make out anything that anyone's saying. There was another movie that we saw where I just felt like the characters never shut up. Like there's never a minute of silence in these movies. Dude, Mike fucking Epps in Next Friday. Yes. There's not a period in his lines. It is one long run-on sentence that is occasionally interrupted by Ice Cube.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Mike Epps in certain roles, but to go from Chris Tucker to Mike Epps, I feel was a downgrade.
Oh, it's absolutely a downgrade. He doesn't have nearly the comic timing or the charisma of Chris Tucker, and he's not nearly as funny. And I feel bad because Mike Epps is not an unfunny person. But kind of, Mike Epps has one trick. You know, he's Mike Epps. He's Mike Epps in everything. Like, we talked about Meet the Blacks, and he was the same fucking character.
Yeah.
Grown up.
He's a one-note comedian.
Yeah.
And he does that one note pretty good. But, and we'll talk about another comedian here shortly in the third movie who got his first movie role in the third movie. This one was a sharp decline for me. I mean, it served its purpose.
It's funny, but you know how I said, like, Friday is satirical, it's biting, it is definitely an editorial on that place at that time. Yeah, take all of that out, because Next Friday has none of those things. But you know what Next Friday is, actually? Next Friday is what happens when you take the structure of the zany 80s comedy that white people excelled at and give it to a black guy with a sense of humor. Because that's all Next Friday is. Next Friday is a zany white 80s comedy set in 2000 starring black guys. That's it. That is all Next Friday is. It is a goofy-ass premise with, I mean, like the Joker family, especially the lead Joker, they're hilarious. They're stupid funny. But they are the same kind of broad, caddyshackish, dumbass characters that we've seen 100 times in 100 different 80s comedies.
And, you know, the... what was his name? Roach?
Which one?
The
white kid. No,
the white kid.
Yeah.
I liked him, and, you know, finding out his backstory after the movie released really hurt, because he was supposed to come back in the next movie and finding out that he committed suicide.
Holy fuck, he was in Kids. Have you ever seen Kids?
Yeah.
If you know, you know.
But, yeah. like, he committed suicide after Next Friday release. Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, he was supposed to be in the third, and he ended up pretty sure he committed suicide if it was right after filming or right after the movie released.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really tragic, and because they was building him up to be because Mike Epps wasn't supposed to be in the third one. It was supposed to be him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, his tragic passing opened up the door for Mike Epps to return. So, you know, I guess Mike Epps got another role because a white man died.
Okay, Jason.
So
what happens in this movie?
They talk about lack of opportunity.
So what happens in this movie really quick, if I can get past this uncomfortable moment.
Hey, you make Ronnie uncomfortable. I'm here to make you uncomfortable.
You could try, big boy, but it's not going to be very successful. So there's a lot of world building. You're getting to know the uncle, you're getting to know the cousin, you're getting to know the neighbors. And then after that, the major plot point is the uncle hasn't paid his taxes in a dog's age. So they're going to lose the house tomorrow. There's a you're ticking time bomb. If they don't, it's similar to the first one. If they don't make X amount of money, then the world ends. So there's a long, tortured, extended sequence when you're at Mike Epps' job. And they're still trying to figure out how are we going to make money. And eventually what they figure out is that the Joker brothers are thieving. So they're going to rob the Joker brothers. And then again, we get into that's the whole third act of the movie is them trying to steal the hydraulic pump full of cash, and they get like halfway caught, and then they have to rescue Mike Epps and Roach, and this whole time the B plot is Debo is trying to figure out where the hell they hid Craig, so he gets them to call John Witherspoon, and John Witherspoon says, you know, thinks his son's in trouble. So now he has to drive to Rancho Cucamonga, and Devo sneaks into the dog catcher van with Sticky Fingers. Gosh, I miss Sticky Fingers. I've been on an Onyx kick lately, because if you got 10 Sticky Fingers, it's an imitation of your imagination. But wait, it gets worse.
This has one good line from it, and repeated it the other day.
What's that? Oh, fucking Mike Epps. Yeah, don't be hanging around with black people. We live wrong. Dude, I fucking cried. Like, Next Friday's not that funny. Again, not every zany 80s comedy was, and this is exactly that structure. But that if Mike Epps ever delivered a line perfectly, it was, don't be hanging out with black people. We live wrong. It was pitch perfect. And it was the perfect guy said it, because Mike Epps has that just sad kind of way of delivering all his lines.
Yeah, and he said that with such conviction.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you're wrong.
Yeah. Mike Epps is definitely like having an existential moment of black people are awful. It's great.
Yeah, he's like, guess why you don't hang out with black people.
So funny. The rest of it, though, again, it's why... Next Friday is the very reason we tend to not review comedies on this network, because it's like comedy is extremely subjective, and in the sense that the same joke cracks up one person and the person right next to him doesn't think it's funny. Robert and I have way too different, like, this is the stuff that we both think is funny and we've cracked each other up on occasion, but for the most part, like, stuff that makes me laugh doesn't make Robert laugh and vice versa. And so, like, we can talk about movie craft all day. And that's the thing, is like, there's nothing wrong with the movie craft the Next Friday. It's a stupid comedy. They world build, they character build, they set up two plots, they resolve both plots. It's a fine enough structure. It is entirely dependent on how funny you think this nonsense is. And so, like I said, if you enjoy the stupid broad comedy of rambling black people and rambling Mexicans, sure, it's funny. And I definitely laugh in some parts. Again, that Mike Epps line still cracks me up. If this isn't really your thing, you're going to hate Next Friday and everything about it. So, anything else about Next Friday?
No, this is the, you know, and this is another reason why we don't do comedies a lot, is because the first one is so good that it's kind of hard to maintain that, so you do start seeing the decline. So this is where we come up with the longer room. And you start seeing that decline. And then we get to the final movie of the evening, where there's a sharp decline.
Yes, when all else fails, make a Christmas installment of your series. Friday After Next. Ugh. Friday After Next is a 2002 American stoner comedy film directed by Marcus Raboy. Yeah, here's another indication that your series may need to just be shot the head and done with, when you can't keep a director for more than one movie at a time.
Your directors progressively get worse. Like, you go from a decent director down to like somebody that like directed the Campbell Soup commercial.
Yeah, Marcus Raboy is an American film and music video director. In the early 90s, he amassed a large number of music video credits, directing music videos for Mary J. Blige, The Dixie Chicks, Rihanna, Luther Vandross, Shakira, Santana, and Westlife, among notable artists. His film feature credits are Friday After Next and Janky Promoters. You know, that award-winning motion picture, that piece of cinema, Janky production. Good yeah. God.
I still wonder why we can't get a movie of.
Well, now with ChatGPT and everything helping us, we might. He directed an Anthony Jeselnik stand-up, Fire in the Maternity Ward. He did one for Pete Holmes, Dirty Clean, Vert Doss, A Broad Understanding. Yeah, so basically, he did Friday After Next, an episode of Platinum, The Life and Times of Marcus Felony Brown, which was a TV film, Janky Promoters. And then he just stuck with directing stand-up. Like, he's got really good music credits, though. So I think the other guy also, Steve Carr, was also mostly a music video director. And again, like, you can't knock the hustle. He's got good credits here. He did OPP. He did The Headbanger, featuring EPMD, featuring K-Solo and Redman. Wicked by Ice Cube. Yo, it was one of my favorite rap songs ever. Da Lynch Mob's Gorillas in the Mist.
That was a good song.
Oh, shit. He did Down with the King by Run DMC. And Jason, he did Another Body Murdered by Faith No More and the Booyah Tribe. Shit.
And he also seen he done, Campbell's Chunky Soup, Super Bowl ad, 1993.
He did Digging the Grave, which is an amazing song by Faith No More. He did Time Bomb by Rancid. Let's see, some more recent stuff that he did. In 2012, he did Celebrate by Whitney Houston and Jordan Sparks. He did What the Hell by Avril Lavigne.
Seems like he's got a vast spectrum of genres, too.
Yeah, so, like, the quality of your features, not going to be great when you're getting a music video director to do it, but let's not say he's incompetent. Obviously, he has a niche, and he's good at that niche. Anyway, this was also written by Ice Cube. They brought back Mike Epps, John Witherspoon, DC Don Curry, Anna Maria Hosford is back, Clifton Powell. And this is the introduction of Cat Williams. Can we just talk about Cat Williams for a second? How big of a fan of his are you?
I like Cat Williams in small doses.
See, Cat Williams has become easily one of my favorite modern comedians, but he is an acquired taste. Like, his cadence, rhythm, and delivery are wildly different from a normal human being's. Like, something that my son and I talk about, because again, my son, the 10-year-old budding stand-up comic, one of the things I talk about with Jonas is it sounds like they're just riffing. Like, Patton Oswalt just sounds like he's doing a TED Talk half the time. But those are structured jokes. These are stories that he massages into bits and jokes with punchlines. And it just comes across natural because Patton Oswalt comes across as natural. Same thing with the Legend of Slisinger. And I'm drawing on those two comics because those are the ones my son knows the best. Cat Williams, his stand-up does not sound natural. Like, he absolutely, like, I made the joke about Khrushchev and banging a shoe. Dude, Cat Williams absolutely sounds like he is giving, like, something of a rally speech, or a rant at the UN half the time, in just his own way.
I tell you, now I want to tell you this. I want to make this comparison. You tell me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
Sometimes Cat Williams sounds like he's giving a sermon at a South Alabama church.
Yeah, he's got that Neil Fallon, like Reverend cadence to him.
Sometimes he gets on that Reverend cadence.
Yeah, which I like.
That you'll, yeah, like I said, I could deal with him. I like him. I mean, here recently, a lot of people have fallen off, and you know, with some of the with the Shannon Sharp interview, which I've listened to.
And so have I. I didn't listen to it. I didn't listen to it from the beginning to end. I saw clips of it on TikTok, and it got memed the fuck out of.
I've listened to the entire interview, okay. And it's garnered some respect from me to Cat Williams, because you could tell that there's earnesty and honesty in his voice. You could tell that, mm-hmm. you know, he's speaking out and stuff, and you know, he's just trying to be real. And you know, he brings up some controversial stuff. He brings up some stuff that makes you kind of wonder. And you know, but I can only take a cadence for so long. I gotta take breaks every now and then. Like, I can't do an entire special. I can take him for about 30 minutes, and then I gotta take a break.
His older stuff is a lot more tolerable than his newer stuff. And I think he fell into the trap that a lot of comedians fall into of, he had a shtick that was funny and got him notoriety, and then it just became do the shtick over and over and over again. And so, like, now his stand, like, I watched his most recent one, and I laughed, but because he's fucking hilarious. But I've noticed that he's now less bitingly satirical and more overly reliant on his shtick. And a lot of his shtick is repetition. And anyone that knows me knows that I'm not a huge fan of repetition. A running gag is one thing, but when you...
Oh, whatever. When you, we beat dead horses here.
When you take 100 words to say one thing and most of that 100 words is the same word, it gets to me after a while. And I didn't used to feel that way about Cat Williams. But I bring him up because he plays Money Mike in Friday After Next. And two things about that. One, he is fucking hysterical as this arrogant, this fucking 3 feet tall, arrogant pimp. Some of the shit he says to the girl, it's just like, I no longer need your presence. Like, be gone.
Yeah.
Like, he has such a pomposity. It's really funny. Like, Cat Williams was fucking perfect in that role.
He makes this movie.
Oh, yeah. They don't use him enough. That's the second thing I was going to say. Like, yeah. What they use him for, and let me get through the premise of this real quick. There's a guy in a Santa Claus suit robbing people, and he robs Cube and Mike Epps. They're living in an apartment in South Central Los Angeles. They work as security guards at a strip mall. The dads and the uncle are now running a rib shack in said plaza. And much like the first Friday, kind of in the second Friday, it kind of all takes place in this one location. And the main thing that they're dealing with is essentially they're on the lookout for the guy robbing people in the Santa suit. But for the most part, it's sort of a day in the, it goes back to, which the second one kind of abandoned. It goes kind of back to a day in the life, which, you know, that's what made the first one so good. It was a day in the life of these slackers. This is a day in the life of these two idiot rent-a-cops, these two idiot security guards. And like the thinnest of thin plots is, they want their shit back from the guy that robbed them. Oh, when it's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens, mom's cooking dinner in collard greens. That's it. That's the whole fucking movie. Yeah. So there's a store in the strip mall. It's a clothing store, and it's run by Cat Williams and one of his hoes. And you don't meet Cat until about 30 minutes into the movie, 30, 45 minutes into the movie. And then even when you do meet him, he doesn't do much until you're about an hour into it. And then the whole third act is the party, the Christmas party that they throw. And it's all just him and Terry Crews. Terry Crews plays the building manager's son who just got home from prison. And, you know, and of course, every man that comes home from prison wants to fuck the nearest guy they can find. We all know this. And so Terry Crews is just smitten with Cat Williams. And there's a long, drawn-out, tortured, quasi-uncomfortable scene between Terry Crews trying to commit a rape of Cat Williams in the bathroom. To which the only thing that makes that scene watchable is Cat Williams going, you was just going to take it, weren't you? as he has his Terry Crews' balls in a vice. It's fucking great. And it's about the only thing that saves that entire sequence. But of course, because we can't have nice things, Terry Crews, he ends up getting, because essentially Cat Williams is the bad guy in this movie, I guess, because he's a little misogynistic, I guess, as a pimp. Because, I don't know, pimps aren't misogynistic or anything, right? So anyway, so he ends up letting go of the vice grip, but the girl, because he was mean to her, leaves him there, and Terry Crews goes chasing him through the streets. Anyway, I want more Cat Williams and Friday at the next, and he's criminally underused.
Yes. He was the bright spot of this movie. And I really think Ice Cube just phoned this one in.
Yeah. The other two made money. This one will make money too. I don't really care anymore.
Yeah. He was like, I'm pretty sure that they had like some hostage pig tied up. and was beating. Yes. I brought out the hostage pig reference.
It's pig hostage, by the way. If you're going to rip off my skit, do it right.
Andrew said that he's a historian and pulled out more dinosaurs. I'm going to bring out the pig hostage and one up him.
Yes, Jason, so, you're a pretty girl. You're pretty too.
I look, you know.
But your hair is not as luxurious as Cat Williams.
No. But now so soon. But yeah, this movie really let me down. I was hoping with the cast it would be a bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. Cat Williams was severely underused. Yeah. But when he was on, he was like, he chewed scenery like
a motherfucker. I was going to say, every line of his is fucking gold. Even like when they stop the guy from the couple from stealing in the store.
Pimp down. Woman, get over here. Pimp down.
Pimp SOS. So good.
I was rolling on that. Because, like I said, he was the highlight, the bright spot of this movie. And just to, like, see, like, this is where he got his start.
Right.
To where he's progressed now is insane to see how much he's grown from this small
I do think role. It's interesting, just to take it back to the Shannon Sharp thing, and then we'll get out of here, that Cat Williams' whole story is basically, I'm not a minstrel. That there's a fine line between knowing the things of the picadillos of your culture and making fun of them, to being a minstrel and being broad and insulting about your culture. And he was like, I'm not going to do it. And the thing that he kind of points to, it's kind of low hanging fruit, and there's a conversation to be had about it that I'm not having now, but he's just like, why do they have to put black guys in a dress? That was his whole thing on Shannon Sharp. Why do they have to put black guys in a dress? You know, this country goes, his whole like editorial take was, they go out of their way, this country goes out of their way to dehumanize and emasculate black men. And in order to gain notoriety and fame and fortune, you have to go through the emasculation process so that white people will accept you. That is his whole fucking argument in the Shannon Sharp interview. And so he's like, I wasn't going to wear the dress. Kevin Hart's going to wear the dress. Kevin Hart gets to be famous and accepted by white people. And I'm, you know, still selling out arenas left and right. I mean, fucking Cat Williams is coming to Tampa. And I can tell you right now, I can't afford to go. So it's not like he's not successful. But I think Cat Williams, what came out of that, for me at least, what came out of that Shannon Sharp interview was Cat Williams basically really resentful of, I'm trying to do better and I am trying to do well and I'm trying to play by the rules as best I can, but I'm not going to be a gay minstrel so that white people will like me more. And I lose out to Kevin Hart, who was just like basically doing drag and blackface at the same time. That is Cat Williams' whole fucking argument. And I kind of see where
there's more to it.
Go ahead. Well, you said that, and I wanted to finish my point, but what more to it is there?
Oh no, there's a whole thing to it about the, you know, the sex trafficking,
Okay, I didn't bring any of that up. I was just thinking, the, I was just...
No, I'm with, saying that...
Yeah.
No, I mean, it ties to that. Okay. It ties to that. You know, the whole Hollywood backlot deals and stuff that, you know, to for the Hollywood to break down certain people to basically run their career to make them for them to basically bend the knee and do all these things and submit to these unethical things that they're going to do on top of, you know, wearing dresses and all this. There's more to the things there that will gain their success. It's not just, hey, you know, you wear the dress, you're going to get success. No, there's more to the on top. The dress thing is part of, is like one part of it. There's more to the submission and the what's the alert word I'm looking for? The debauchery that goes on to it. And, you know, he goes into it a lot more, especially with, you know, it's relevant. The Puff Daddy stuff. He was talking about that on the channel, and everybody was like, oh, you're stupid. You're crazy. Cat Williams crazy. He's being bitter and stuff. Which, and then when all this comes out.
In defense of the people who doubt Cat Williams, sometimes when you ask someone what 2+2 is and he wants to tell you a story about his shoes, doesn't help. Like, well, I love Cat Williams to death, but if someone was at, you know, a gunpoint, you know, with your kids on the line, say a bad thing about Cat Williams, he's a little fucking long-winded. Like, I love Cat Williams, and I will listen to his stories, and I watch some of that Shannon Sharp stuff on TikTok, and the guys,
you know what?
The white guys making fun of him, like doing TikToks about him, all had the same take. It was every time you asked Cat Williams a direct question, he gave you a wildly indirect answer.
You know, he's like the Young Bucks. He's going to get his shit in.
That's just Cat Williams is about the size of the Young Bucks, number one. Number two, yeah, Cat Williams, the super kicking comic.
He's gonna get his shit in, but we'll close out on that one.
Yeah. All right. So that
you can use that on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
Cat Williams is gonna get his shit in.
This whole Cat Williams stuff is all going on TikTok. You know, sure, I could talk about how brilliant Friday is, and that could be the TikTok, but nope, we're just gonna talk about Cat Williams. All right. So it's been a fun hour talking about these movies. I'm definitely learning with some of this stuff, especially the stuff I do with you. We don't need to do more than an hour. Like, anything needed to be said about these movies, we said it. We're good. If you need more, I'm sure other podcasts have gone into it. You can go listen to them. Yesterday, speaking of two-hour long-winded podcasts, we reviewed Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And then Thursday, myself and Sean Comer are taking another deep dive into cinema. I have to do a different pose every time now. We're going to be looking at Waking Life, Marriage Story, and Run Lola Run. You ever seen Run Lola Run there, Jason?
No, I have not. What are these movies about, Mark?
Sit Pookie down and make her watch Run Lola Run so that she can once again look at you and say, why are you friends with Mark? It's not like dummy quality.
I get asked that at least on a weekly basis. Anyway,
make her watch Run. It's an hour and 20 minutes. Make her do it on TikTok. Go TikTok live. Make Pookie watch Run Lola Run and just record her responses to some of this shit.
You know, I'm still like get questioned about why I made her watch the whole Anna Kendrick doll thing. Yeah.
I was at a party. I was at a party the other night. I'm still talking about Dummy, by the way. I still tell people.
I'm still waiting on season two.
All right. So that's this week. Next week, we got No Bananas. We got Ronnie's coming on, The Whiskey Rebellion. We're going to talk WrestleMania weekend and all things WrestleMania. I'm going to Windrose on Tuesday, so no podcast. I don't know if you know what Windrose is, but it's a bunch of guys who dress up as dwarves from The Lord of the Rings and sing power metal. Speaking of power metal, on Wednesday...
Yeah, me and you talked about this, because they're coming to Cincinnati, and I sent you a thing about Cincinnati.
That's right,
you tell me about them.
Yep. So, Wednesday is the Metal Hammer of Jukebox. We're going to look at Aelstorm, Voyage of the Dead, Marauder, which now, because of the format change, we can actually review EPs without, you know, having to add stuff to it. But more importantly than all of that, it'll be the debut of Jesse Starcher's Time to Eat. The entirely artificial intelligence written album by Jesse Starcher. I'm very excited about this.
Oh, Lord.
Bow to your masters, the AI. All right. And when is Jason coming back? Jason.
28th of May.
The 28th. Wow. Really? Okay. Yeah. The 28th of May. You're going to be on for Furiosa. Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not coming on for Abigail?
Did not know that you had me on. I wouldn't mind coming off for Abigail.
Now, right now, it's me, Robert, Dorian, if he makes it. I don't think... I probably Alexis is going to be on that one, too. I don't have her on, but she also said last night she was on Godzilla. I didn't have her on that either.
It seems like it's crowded, so I guess I will not be on Abigail.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. All right.
I'm going to see it opening weekend, so yeah. If there's a open seat available, let me know. And what day is that?
That is April 22nd.
April 22nd. Let me see where I'm at.
All right. Well, while you do that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm home.
So that is it for our review of the Friday trilogy. Jason TC doesn't do anything else besides podcasts with me. So we're not going to do another tortured series of plugs. All right, folks, thanks for joining us here on Long Road to Ruin. For the Protocol son, Jason Teasley, I'm your mandated reporter, Mr. Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.